Hello, this is Daryl War for
January 2024.
Continuing on with the retrospectives, this will be for Episode 2, Chamber Pots and Coffee Cups. Hopefully everybody enjoyed the retrospective to Episode 1, which was mainly reviews because it would have taken 3 hours to go through absolutely everything. So hopefully I can give a little more details to all the creation stuff that was going on when I put these episodes together. We shall hope, of course. Now, where are we starting? Just listened and read stuff tonight? And yeah, I made about 9 inquiries on the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows .wordpress.com. And there were about 11 tracks when I looked at the CD version. So that would mean that the scenes are somewhere between 9 and 11. Milligan and Hecubus explain everything that happens in Dark Shadows as we skip along. Oh yeah, that took some doing. I remember that, just trying to figure out, like, how much stuff do I have to really go over? There was quite a bit of stuff. Just trying to figure out where I can look at where it all was. I think, yeah, I did. I had something that really explained it. Our hosts, meaning Milligan and Hecubus from the Kids in the Hall, brief us with what is left out of this rewrite, as Victoria Winters returns from 1795, or at least the 1790s era, in the neck of time, meaning that she was about to get hanged. Much unfortunate delving into 18th century lack of restrooms, as well as a strange effect the Collinsport coffee seems to have on the Evans abode. Dr. Hoffman deals and receives many wisecracks, as well as helping out Carolyn. Which, yeah, that's good. I mean, if anybody's like, oh, you're so disrespectful to Dr. Hoffman, well, I gave her some of the best jokes that I've been saving since I was in single digits as far as age goes. So, I think I did her a great service indeed. Meanwhile, even as Wadsworth encourages this risky relationship with the post-kidnapped Maggie, he also takes a moment to confront Barnabas as to his past transgressions over his victims, such as Willie Loomis, making significant comparisons to help him see even practical reasons not to take such abusive action towards people. And that's what everybody complains about with Barnabas, that he just gets so violent. And it's like, well, if you just get a really nice valet butler to take him in hand and explain things practically, you'll get some pretty good results, as I've discovered. Still, Cassandra has a unique way of shooting her Cupid's arrow at Roger Collins as he angrily answers the phone in the dead of night. Yes, indeed. Quite a bit of this, I mean, I just sort of put it together, what was it, 2012 that I, like, put it together before the film came out again. And that was why I was so glad that when there was something about chamber pots and the reeking of that, it showed up in the 2012 film. And I was like, well, I have put it out there before that, so I don't have to feel, it's not like I ripped it off or anything. I was already thinking about it. And I was kind of glad that the writer of that film felt the same way. I mean, I felt like kind of gratified. Okay, we're all on the same page here. Very good. And Milligan gets started. Good evening and welcome to the Pit of Ultimate Darkness. Now, I had him start because that's the thing that Milligan knows and Hecubus knows is the Pit of Ultimate Darkness. Because even though the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows is a blend of the two titles, skits in the Kids in the Hall show and Dark Shadows the soap opera, the boys hosting this radio drama do not quite recognize yet that they're in a blend. They're still just sort of going with their previous training of this is the Pit of Ultimate Darkness. It's not yet the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows, but they're going to get there. We're going to be okay. I'm your host, Simon Milligan. Listen, listen, listen to my voice. As opposed to, you know, he's like, look into my face. Look into my face and the face of evil and all that. So I figured I'd twist that into listen to my voice because I knew it was going to be a radio drama. It was going to be an audio thing. So you'd listen to my voice and know that to listen to my voice is to listen to the voice of evil. Because in the actual Kids in the Hall show, it was like, look into my face and know that my face is the face of evil and all that. So I just twisted that a little, you know, that's how you kind of play around with this stuff. And Hecubus says, yellow. Now, I know he did that in some, he said yellow as in hello in one of the skits. I can't remember which one. I want to say it was like the one where he was getting possessed or whatever and pretending to be other people and not doing it correctly. And Milligan just kind of gasps and regains composure. Manservant Hecubus, ladies and gentlemen, just introducing. And Hecubus always doing the Satan thing. I am ready to serve you, master, and Satan. And Milligan whispering evil and Hecubus snickering. And Milligan says, it has come to my attention that we presented only a smidgen of evil updates on this program. Too many lovely things have been happening. And this is me correcting stuff you know, it's about like late 2013. I'm beginning to, I think there was a podcast about this where I showed like this old recording of me telling about like the extra stuff I'd added to my husband. I think the parentheses say October 2013. Might have been November for all I could recall, because I can't remember when I started uploading files to Internet Archive. It was around, it was like fall of 2013 that I would like just said, hey, you know, I'm going to give up my job and go to this thing because it cured this crazy ailment that I didn't have a name for 7 years and 8 years now. But yeah, it was like, I was just going to be like, yeah, this cured me, so I'm going to devote myself to it. So, hey, we're going to go here. Hecubus wonders, that is terrible, Master. What kinds of things? And Melgan, well, to bring our listeners up to snuff, and we're going to glaze through a lot of stuff that happened in the original show in order to get us up to date to where we're interrupting in episode two. So, there was the demise of Jason McGuire before our first episode, and Milligan rubs his hands. That was far too lovely to be believed. Then, of course, our poor Miss Winters was sadly devastated over the passing of her odd engagement choice, Burke Devlin. And yes, I know, what a beautifully evil last name he had, meaning Devlin. Yeah, it sounds like devil, so of course it's beautifully evil sounding. And Hecubus says, ah, yes, Master, what a left bummer. Because if you say, what a right bummer, that's an expression of what a absolute bummer, meaning what an absolute bummer, just downer. And so he says, what a left bummer, to be more like, you know, left-handed, just they're in that throes of being a little hellacious and dark and all that. So that's why he says, what a left bummer and what a right bummer. And then there was the experiment as Dr. Hoffman tried to turn Mr. Vampire Collins, meaning Barnabas, into a normal man. This went significantly foul as he ended up becoming the true age he might be if he was mortal, meaning like skin and hair and bones and all that, you know. It's like then he'd be like X hundred of years old and not be doing too good health-wise. And so, yeah, it was not doing too good. Hecubus, aren't you skipping ahead, Master? Aren't you giving away spoilers to those who just tuned in? Yeah, if you're watching the original show, he's giving away spoilers. But for people who know the show already and it's not spoilers to them, this is a relief series. And so we're trying to change stuff and just being like, well, this is the stuff we missed and we're skipping ahead to get to the fixable things. And Milligan confesses that, yes, that's a little bit of evil. And then I was learning back then, yeah, you can combine like tracks and stuff and have like two different things. Like you could say one thing is one voice and the same thing is another voice and have it sound like two voices speaking at once. So go ahead and do it. And so I did that for the first time in 2013 with Hecubus and Milligan, which was a good thing for me to practice and do. And Milligan says, there are still updates to make in this episode as an intensely, like going back to Barnabas turning into the old man, as an intensely crusty version of a once elegant vampire was getting over the distress, our Carolyn Stoddard wandered in to discover his coffin and was aggrieved to become his victim, which, yeah, like Barnabas was like the old man Barnabas and just messed up by Hoffman's experiments. And so then Carolyn kind of wanders in at the wrong place at the wrong time type of thing. And she gets bit. And then, thankfully, you see, then I think the next episode, Jonathan Frid is all recovered. Vampire's all recovered because he's gotten some fresh blood. And he's gotten it from a relative. And that's why I described it later as, however, this was lucky as her scintillating hemoglobin. I couldn't figure out, like, I gotta describe that her blood's a little different for whatever reason. Or it's, like, fresher than most people's blood. Seemed to give him a true cure for the false one he let himself in for. Because he wanted to become mortal. And, like, it's better just to go back to being a youthful vampire than to being a mortal who's all ragged and messed up. He was certainly pleased to halt the endurance of excessive medication he needed to keep going at all, because, like, yeah, I figured Hoffman would have given him a lot of drugs to just deal with being all, like, super, like, 200, 300 years old or whatever. Hecubus says, my, that's a lot of skipping, Master. Are you sure we aren't ready for a peep yet? And Milligan says, well, considering the television show this story is based on is over 1,200 episodes in length and well over 600 hours long, give or take commercials, because it depends on where you're watching it, we do have to work on some augmenting, meaning, like, you know, kind of cutting it up and making it shorter. And then Hecubus remembers Wadsworth, but what about Barnabas Collins' new butler? How does he fit into all this? Milligan, well, I suppose he's mostly shaking his head and putting up with it, unfortunately. But he's a tough old chap. We can still expect better things to come. For some reason that we cannot recall, which, because at the time I couldn't recall, like, wait, what was going on? There was, like, this seance or whatever. And why did they even start the seance that sent Victoria Winters into the past? Many residents of the estate began a seance for the sake of David Collins' troubles. This somehow helped Victoria Winters fall into 1795, and much was learned about why Barnabas Collins became a vampire, as well as a lot of other destructive problems throughout another effusive 94 episodes, or about 39 hours of television watching, if you want to get technical. Oh yeah, I was so grateful to be able to, like, revamp this chapter because I felt it was sort of, there was a lot of stuff I wanted to add to the old episodes that I felt I just sort of knew in the back of my mind and that other people could kind of figure out. But no, I was like, you got to make it kind of plain and put dialogue in that like explains that. And Wadsworth before, it was just kind of by episode 5 that we're noticing that he's trying to get Maggie and Barnabas together, whereas I redid episode 1, so it was even more obvious, and I think even here in episode 2, it's even more obvious that Wadsworth figured out that Maggie's a reincarnation of Josette, so it's like, let's get you where you're going to be most useful, sir, to yourself and to everybody else, and he does a pretty good job of that, and plus, by the time I started rewriting the earlier episodes or adding to them, I'd already accomplished, like, episode 13 and 14, so I'd already fallen head over heels with, as they say, with Willie Loomis and Wadsworth and him had a rapport, so I realized by that time that Wadsworth and Willie know each other, so I can give a little more to Wadsworth, knowing something kind of under the radar. So even then, you know, he's able to make these practical bestowances to Barnabas about, like, hey, you shouldn't treat people badly because of X, Y, and Z. But going back to where we were in the show, Hecubus says, and then we knew our sweetness, because later episodes, before I had updated, you know, episode 1 and 2, to be able to figure out, like, Milligan and Hecubus are just in love with Super Crush on Angelique Bouchard. And they just as should well, because they always claim to be so evil. They've got to be in love with her. They're desperate for a date. But anyway, she's going to be the one that they're hot for, not Josette and not Maggie. They're not going to be hot for her. They're going to be hot for Angelique, you know, because they're always dying to go out with some chicks. That shows pretty clearly in the Kids in the Hall bit of Ultimate Darkness skits. There's always this desire to find women who are willing, if not able. And so Milligan says, yes, the woman of total cruelty, the lady with all the tarot cards alight. And I made a joke on that other podcast, like, oh, look, there's a script on the bed, because it was from the blooper reel. You know, when she's got all those tarot cards alight, there's an arrow pointing to the bed of Angelique Bouchard where there's the script, you know, like Laura Parker's script, presumably. Where it's just, you just get to break all the fourth walls in the show. My show. Our most evil and beloved Angelique. At last, I've been waiting to drool over this mistress of the deepest dark. Although, it'll be another episode of our show, meaning the pit, until we get a good look at her, meaning Cassandra Angelique. And Milligan says, still, I miffed. Why didn't she pick me? You know, because he wants Angelique. I wouldn't mind being a vampire for her. I've got what it takes. I'm both evil and polite. What is it, my old bridge partner, going back to the joke of him and Barnabas being partners in a game of bridge where they're cheating, my old bridge partner has that I haven't got. So he's, Milligan is like getting into like, hey, I want Angelique for my own. That's the thing, you know, I'm pulling for Milligan when it comes to, you know, who Angelique ends up with most of the time. And Hecubus, knowing he gets that Milligan gets so irritated with him and kind of like pushes him, he goes, yes, please, our most evil temptress, just have dinner with him. He's desperate for a day, and I'd like a night off once in a while, meaning, like, I could have a break from Sir Simon Milligan. This girl just goes out with him one night. And Milligan says, but we must press on until that possibility occurs. We enter the house at Collinwood. A seance is in progress, or rather the tail end of one, because we're getting to the end of the 1790s period, and Victoria comes back from the past, because she somehow traveled, time traveled to the past. So yes, there's a lot of time machine jokes, because I just felt that, you know, when I was watching the show originally many years ago. And Elizabeth asks, Victoria, are you all right? And Victoria's like, no, would you be if you were being hanged on the gallows in accusation of being a witch in 1795 or 76, whichever. Oh, those ropes, I'll never wear a turtleneck again. And Roger says, dreadful idea, this entire seance, dreadful idea. And Barbara says, yes, horrible idea. Whose was it? Why are you all staring at me like that? And Elizabeth says, makes no sense to me, as it was my idea, and I think it was. Now, Victoria's, she's starting to ask for people that she misses and she has known, people who she was, like, dating or got romantically close to. Burke, where's Burke? And Carolyn, oh dear, must we explain to her all over again that he died in a plane crash? And then Victoria's thinking from the 1790s, Peter, meaning Peter Bradford, where's Peter? And Carolyn has no idea who that is. Now who is she talking about? Elizabeth, could be somebody from the foundling home for all I know, because they got Victoria Winters from a foundling home. And then I've got to add this other thing that's like Wizard of Oz, Victoria, and the Scarecrow, where is he? Carolyn, now I'm really lost. And Elizabeth said, that one has just got to be from a book she read, meaning that she knows the Wizard of Oz book. And then I was grabbing something from, I think, what used to be called Wikia, now it's called Fandom, whatever, you know, like, had stuff from, I was just reading about, like, old episodes of Dark Shadows, and there was something Roger had said about the girl, you know, she's not going to comfort you when the shutters creak. So I just kind of took that line and hardly the girl to comfort you when the shutters creak. I told you. And Elizabeth's like, Roger, we don't need your acerbic remarks. We need a doctor. And Julia Hoffman, I'm a doctor. Because previously it was like, oh, she's a historian. Well, and then Roger's like, well, wonders never cease. And then I had to give Barnabas this line somewhere because it's a very British thing to say. Not bloody likely. And then Roger, because he's always kind of the comic relief, you know, that's the most English thing I've heard you say since you arrived from England, because he claimed that he arrived from England. So it's like, you better say some English sayings, dude. And that was the nice thing about Slave of a Vampire on YouTube with the DS annotations. I mean, she made some good jokes about, like, Barnabas coming from England. It's like, oh yeah, we got the Beatles, and we got Betty Hill, and we've got this and this, and it's like, oh, hey. And I still love that bit, that one caption, like my hat, because we never saw Barnabas in a hat again. Most English thing you've said since you arrived from England. Which wouldn't be true if it were actually happening on the show, but it's happening in my show instead, so there we go. And then Hoffman, can we all please calm down? And Elizabeth agrees, yes, let's all calm down and let what's-her-name use her doctorate. Yeah, how do we know this person? She's like some historian, and suddenly she's here and she's a doctor? Okay. Let's see. Feet shuffling noises, doors opening, gentle sighs. And Roger asks, brandy anyone? And Elizabeth agrees, by all means. And Barnabas says, no thank you. So there's liquid pouring and... Aye, aye, aye. Let's see. So Roger, sarcastically, well, that was an excellent idea. A true unveiling of my son's problems. Because I think how it all got started was, oh no, Debbie's in trouble. But if we can figure out why he's having all these weird, you know, things, like, and so let's just do this or whatever. Elizabeth says, I didn't want to sit, Roger. I'm sorry. It seemed a better idea than simply sending him away to a boarding school or a hospital. And Roger, you know, because it's always, things are always easier before a television show starts. So, of course, he's going to say, you know, I thought our problems were fairly standard before Miss Winters came to stay here. Since she arrived, it is as though we create twice as many problems when we attempt to solve one. And Elizabeth, well, I'm grateful that another green blob, meaning Slimer, isn't at the root of it all. That's solved enough for me. And then Barnabas, Cousin Elizabeth, we did establish it was merely an asylum patient in a green coat, because that's what Wadsworth was telling everybody at the end of episode one. Elizabeth, I know I wasn't here for it, but I shan't believe that, because it just probably just sounded too damn weird for her. And Roger's all, I saw the beastly creature, and I'm satisfied it was a patient, because he just wants to grapple onto what's going to be the best explanation that's going to make sense and let us carry on with our lives. Carolyn, I saw it too, Uncle Roger, and I hardly believe that the idea that a floating green monster that wreaks havoc on the kitchen, eats flowers, and attacks David was a patient from Wyndcliff, because Carolyn's right, it was Slimer, the ghost. That's what that was. And I don't know if they've gotten over their month of showers to get through it. And Roger says, I don't care what it was. I'm just grateful that it's gone. It has been for a month now. Okay, yeah, so he does say it's been a month. So I guess they had their month of showers or whatever. And I don't need a seance to put my mind to rest about that. And then, bonk, you know, ouch, because the microphone just hit him in the head, you know. It's breaking the fourth wall again. And so we pretend that Milligan and Hecubus are kind of working like the stage hands on the Dark Shadows set. And Milligan says, Hecubus, get the microphone higher because it just bonked the guy in the head. And Hecubus says, sorry, master. And Hoffman, I've given Miss Winters a sedative. Roger, who's, you know, the lush, don't suppose you've got any more in that bag of yours. And Hoffman, knowing that he's lush, I think what you've got in that glass is sedative enough for you. So it's kind of like she's heckling Roger, too. And Roger gulps, indeed, I think I'll pour another, because that's easy enough for him to do. Carolyn, I'll come too, Mother. Barnabas, I'll help as well. See, that's the thing. Like, so many of these shows, there's always this terrible, like, cliche where something's happening and all the characters, like, all kinds of characters who are helpful characters, they want to help out and they're always offering to help out because everybody's so damn polite. And then it just gets ridiculous. You know, it gets ridiculous how many people want to help with, like, helping one person, like, get to bed or something. Just silly like that. Something easy. So Elizabeth says, I'll help Miss Winters up to her room, And Carolyn says, I'll come too, Mother. And Barnabas also makes an offer. I'll help as well. So Roger has to make fun of that. Oh, why don't we all go up? Why don't we all go up and help Miss Winters to her damn bedroom? You know, like, she needs that much freaking help. Why don't we all just, like, why don't we build an elevator to get her up there or something? You know, we all just come up with, you know, these crazy inventions to figure this out and just get two into one task. And Elizabeth says, goodness, what is this? A slumber party? Please, Barnabas, show Dr. Hoffman to the library. Mrs. Johnson laid out the coffee, and it must be nearly cooled off by now. So, yeah, I just made up some library. It could have been any room. It could have been that room that... Oh, it's like if you walk in the front door of the Great House, and you go to the left, it's like whatever that room is over there. There's some sort of room over there that they've used for a lot of stuff. Maybe it's a study, I don't know. But I just decided to call it a library, because I think that was also the place where Willie was reading all those books about jewelry and that. I keep thinking that it was that room, too, so I just kind of made it up. It's like, oh, they got a library somewhere, wherever it is. And then, of course, you know, they get over there, and Milligan says, and so the three ladies go up the stairs to Victoria Winter's bedroom, whilst Barnabas and Dr. Hoffman adjourn to this library we've never heard of, because I just sort of made it up on the sly. Coffee pouring noise, you know, that's in brackets. Barnabas, and he would always do this. So, shall I start in on the dreaded Dr. Woodard topic and how responsible you were for it? Because he would, like, tease her with that or whatever the word would be for it, like, just lay it over her head. And I felt like, yeah, Hoffman would say, oh, you really know how to show a girl a good time, Barnabas. Have a biscuit. And she crunches her biscuit. So, from what I gather in the family diaries, there was all sorts of visitors during the time Vicky claims to have gone back in time, either the 1790s. And Barnabas remembers, yes, indeed. Poor Ben never got a wink of sleep, nor did I, and I figured they couldn't have done. And then Hoffman said, yes, digging all those graves. Poor fellow. And Barnabas said, oh, yes, well, and digging other things. Oh? Hoffman asked, yes, all those chamber pots, meaning, you know, he's gonna dig holes to, like, put the chamber pots, like, into the dirt and cover it up. You know, that's, like, maybe how they got rid of them. I have no idea how they really did, because I didn't investigate it that much. I just thought, how gross. I don't want to look anymore. So just came up with something. All those chamber pots, night in, night out. And Kaufman splutters her coffee. Chamber pots? And Barnabas says, yes. Well, he's like, well, you didn't think we had those pretty little lavatories, meaning toilets, you so elegantly flesh on a whim, did you? Oh, no. Plenty of digging outside the cemetery went on back then with all those guests. The whole place simply reeked. I can't tell you the softness of general odor that exists in this day and age. You ought to be grateful. So it's nice that he's like, he knows about this previous time period that was really stinky. And it's like, just, yeah, be grateful that you live in the time that you do and that you're brought up now, because it really was nasty back then. And Hoffman, for gratefulness, says, I am. Thank you for mentioning it. And then Barnabas says, no charge, which is like some old term for, you know, you're welcome, or like, it's all good, or no charge was just, you know, like, I'm not going to charge you any money for my favor or whatever. No problem. It's kind of, no charge is kind of like, eh, no problem. Like, no big deal. Which I think I learned from After Bash. I was looking for that on YouTube, and there were quite a few episodes of that. And Potter and his wife kept saying no charge to each other for things. Like, when they would say thank you, the answer would be no charge as opposed to you're welcome. It was interesting. And I was kind of like, well, that must be, they must be doing their homework on that one. So maybe Barnabas would know the phrase no charge. And then he says, I was wondering, now here's his potentially asking Hoffman on a date. And in my understanding of the characters in the show, she ain't having none of that. It isn't anything where I feel the need to get them together. He doesn't feel that. She doesn't feel that. And I'm just kind of like, you know, it's just a silly thing to throw in. If you would like to go to the pictures tomorrow night. And her attitude is, what? Oh, please. If you want to see Mad Monster Party, you can go by yourself. And originally it was if you want to go see Mad Monster Party again. But it was the kind of thing where, oh, it's a silly, you know, spooky animated, you know, stop motion animation film. Which, yeah, me and my husband tried to watch it. And we just fell asleep on the floor. It was like so, like, just didn't really seem to be good. It was like a musical, too. You think we got interested in that. But yeah, I can't remember much of what it was about at all. I just remember, oh, it's kind of spooky. Mad Monster Party. It says it all in the name. Can't remember much of how it even, what was going on. I should try watching it again, I guess. With all the supernatural ruckus around here, I don't see why you need to watch a movie about it. Don't you care at all about what has happened with Vicky or Phyllis Wick? Meaning, you know, both of them were in the 1790s. Doesn't he give a darn? And he's I suppose, but frankly, all the excitement has worn me out entirely. I think I'll have another cup, meaning another cup of coffee. And that's when Hoffman puts down her twist of the evening. Why bother? It's only postum. And Barnabas splutters into his cup and she smiles. Fooled ya. Milligan the host. As the night wore on, Carolyn and Mrs. Stoddard prepared the grieving Miss Winters to her chamber. Now, I have not got to any of the reviews yet or any of the comments, which I should do. Let's see. So, yeah, there was stuff about, you know, is the catch-up material the host give about Dark Shadows adequate? And one pen pal said, the catch-up material seemed adequate. When things were talked about in this one, I wasn't so lost, and it was a lot easier to follow along with, being that this is my biggest introduction to the fandom. I liked the scene where Wadsworth and Dr. Hoffman weren't getting along. It was very amusing. The scene where Maggie and Sam are a tad confused by caffeine was pretty funny. I liked it. And, yeah, the fellow who got in touch because I was complaining about the internet. The beginning part, the servant of evil and Satan bit, is funny. Tiny little bit of evil in the background music while Milligan talks a Dark Shadows theme. Good stuff, regardless. Introduction to Jason McGuire, since he died in February-March 1969-ish. He was, like, doing some homework, some on-internet homework. Adds more to the DS timeline being used. Not sure why Burke Devlin was an odd engagement choice. She apparently always found him attractive. Did I understand that right? That Barnabas was not always a vampire. I never knew that. Couldn't follow the 1795 stuff. And, yeah, so I considered Burke Devlin an odd engagement choice for Victoria because he was always so pushy about, like, you gotta get over this history kick. And it's like, if it's her damn hobby, leave her alone. You know, she wants to, that's her interest. Leave her alone. And he was always like, again, it's like, you have to be this Donna Reed type who just services her husband or her man or whatever, and I want to be your husband, so you need to get over your hobbies. And it's like, geez Louise, go away. You know, that's what I was thinking. Like, dude, you're just too darn pushy. And it's just, it was annoying. So I felt like, yeah, that's an odd engagement choice. If he's so pushy about her just dropping all things that she loves and enjoys, it's, what's the point? Oh, I didn't know who was Milligan's bridge partner. I'm guessing Barnabas, yeah, that's correct. Victoria referencing her orphanage, Hammond Foundling Home, assuming it is an orphanage, is interesting. The bonk on the head with the microphone was awesome. Needs more of that. To this library we've never heard of. I assume the Dark Shadows cast aren't very studious. Well, I mean, they act like it, but then we don't get any, like, titles or references or authors or anything. We just kind of get, like, well, I read this book, and I really got into this studying, and it's all just generalized, like a lot of things are in soap operas. Love the pouring sound at the beginning, meaning, like, when they go to the library. Simple but effective. Have a biscuit. So English. I had never heard of postum till this, but that it's only postum, and the sound after of near choking is great. Yeah. The whole chamber pot discussion is classic, love it. But worse than dragons? Intrigued by the jeweled lever. Great spinning disc at the back. Haven't figured that out yet. Barnabas, a night owl. Hilarious. Not sure I get why Wadsworth is tinkering with a lab. Interesting. Because he's just kind of getting in Hoffman's way. And there's, like, jokes of him being Dr. Frankenfurter too. So yeah, he's going to be the same kind of experimental type. So sort of a dual interest, dual fandoms there. You know, great, like Rocky Horror Picture Show and Clue the movie. Oh, hidden object. Glad to hear the review for episode 1 was helpful. I just finished listening to episode 2. Here's some thoughts and what I liked about it. You were brave to talk about your abuse in the intro. People can be so uncaring and downright cruel when people admit to being abused, especially on the internet. When you talked of the abuse of the character Willie Loomis and how it affected you, it led me to think of my own writing style and abuse. I never had connected how I treat my characters and my experiences in life. Thanks for that. It really opened my eyes. The intro is really beneficial to me, and I appreciate the explanation of the characters. Plus, I love how much fun you have with it. As you were explaining Barnabas and Angelique's marriage, you called him a tool. That and how you said it cracked me up. Just a side note, when you listed the things Angelique did, it put me in the mind of Scarlett O'Hara, always manipulating circumstances to get what she wants. Of course, she didn't have magic powers at her disposal. I can't stand manipulators. On the episode, the characters choosing to believe that the Green Ghost was an escaped mental patient, meaning from episode 1, in a green coat was funny. The running gag of the microphone being held too low in the scenes is great. I'm glad you explained the coffee substitute in the intro and followed it up in the episode. I would have been lost, meaning postum. The fear of chamber pots, all this stuff these people are surrounded with, and chamber pots terrify them. That's great. Laugh out loud. Oh, a little from Helena for episode 2. If Vicky had ended up using the chamber pot in the 20th century, I would hate to think of Elizabeth potty training a woman in her mid-20s. Shaking my head. Mad monster party, yay. Haven't seen that movie in a while. Just imagine a sequel featuring the cast of Dark Shadows. So that's pretty good. Oh yeah, there was that one person who got through a few episodes, even tried the podcast a little bit, and for episode one was thinking that everybody was just, there was going to be like a plethora of like deaths, you know, just like, just kind of a random murder mystery party, and then all these Collinwood deaths, and there wasn't. But she also says for episode two, this has been enormously helpful for sorting out years of Dark Shadows plot and showing me how everyone's connected. I watched the black and white originals after watching Burton movie first. I'm cringing so much as in the 2012 movie, because yeah, a lot of people do, just from osmosis of ever, you know, so many other people just being angry. Maggie Evans and Victoria Winters and Josette become one character. Yeah, see, and become one character, and they do in the 2012. I'm glad she just says it casually. And when the movie ends, Barnabas' line, "Blood is thicker than water," and now I'm squicked because is that Burton's nod to Miss Winters being a Collins? I like Victoria's bit about never wearing turtlenecks after her hanging, and the potty jokes. So yeah, that's good. It was good. She stepped in, when was this? 2017, yeah, and she didn't quite understand what was going on with the hate speak towards me and the hate speak for rewards towards me until later. I could see her kind of slowly decaying as time went on, as far as, like, being interested in the pit, being able to still talk to me. A lot of people have gone down that way, where it just slowly decays over time, because it's like, well, what do I do? You know, the group hates her, and I kind of like her, so what do I do? Well, I guess I just gradually stop talking to her. And then she's just all alone. Okay. I've been there before, and that's why I'm talking about it now, because I'm not going to be boo-hoo over it. I'm just going to say, I've been here before. And I've said that to a lot of people in blog entries and on the show, where it's like, look, I've been through a lot of this stuff before, and that's why I'm telling you about it. And that's why I got so impatient, because it's like, I don't want to go down these roads. I've been here before. I know what this, you know, where this is going. And if I just stick to my principles, it should end up all right. But I got to stick really hard to those principles. I suspect that a lot of pen pals recognize that. They likely have been through a lot of the same garbage before, where they just go, well, you know, I have no right to judge this person. Just because all these people are bad-mouthing her, they probably have no proof. I have no, they don't even have evidence. It's just, okay. So you showed me a link, big deal. I know the person that I'm writing to, and I have her pages in my hand. And this can't be somebody who's that freaking insane. I'm just not gonna buy it. I don't care. It just, I get the feeling that there's enough pen pals who just recognize that there is another person behind me than whatever they're being thrown, what links are being thrown their way to, like, disparage my character. And also, what I've, like, tried to say, where it's like, if you just ask me about where my head was at in certain instances, that's why I'm glad that dates are on certain things, because I could probably figure out, either by the context or by the time, you know, whatever year it was, where I was at, where my head was at. That's why I record so much about myself, and I review it all the time. You know, I re-go over it. So for episode two again, another pen friend I made about 2016, all the ketchup material was adequate, yes. For some reason, I didn't like Dr. Hoffman in the scenes. That actress played in a lot of horror movies, though, back in the day. Don't know the time machine, but you explained it well. And yes, chamber pots were a big thing then, and very important. Ever used one? Me? No. Funny note, you still have one as part of the pitcher/bowl/wash set and chamber pot. We also have a tea trolley. Love it. But oh, I'm definitely a lemon curd gal. Lemon curd and clotted cream. Yum. Oh, yeah, I agree. The library doth appear, or did appear, but every great house has one, or had one. They usually use the drawing room for meetings. I sneezed. But it isn't very big, is it? Peter Bradford, blast from the past. I like Wadsworth much better than Hoffman. She was a bully, from what I recall. Funny, I've been watching on YouTube, and people make lots of comments about all the coffee consumed on the show. But back then, people drank it all day. My great-grandma always had a cup going all day. Okay, and then Lisa, she's like, Victoria returning from 1795, talking about the hanging, and finally quips, I'll never wear a turtleneck again, snicker. Then there is talk of needing a doctor. Julia, I'm a doctor, Roger replies. Well, wonders never see, laugh out loud. I especially enjoyed when Wadsworth was carrying Julia out of the joint. I liked the snarky conversation that she and Barnabas were having in the library after the seance. Oh, here we go with Tito. I like the delivery for the hosts. I can't speak much to the content. I'm not sensitive to the risks of the dreaded spoiler. Because I guess he was talking about the intro that I did. I liked the little rationalization by Hecubus when he says that he is trying to stay in character, just being evil, right? I liked the synchronized voices singing Little Bit of Evil. It was a cool accent. Well, thank you, yeah. I explained earlier how that was done, like figuring out the program so I could put two different voices I was doing together at once. The transition of Victoria's return was lost on me. Then I think Roger helped me with his trademark Weisenheimer technique. As far as Hoffman's credentials are concerned, I have implicit trust in anyone with sedatives on hand. Holding, as they say. The seance sequence was cool. I like the way Victoria goes from terror of the gallows to the comparatively trivial itinerary references with pretty much the same reaction. Getting back to the Dr. Hoffman character, it seems like a literary trend to have someone bringing medical credentials into the picture. I guess because monsters are of interest to the medical establishment, maybe? For dealing with vampires, maybe biology and history is a good double major. Oh, yeah. And I think with this, Tito is expressing what a lot of people, you know, when they talk about my voice acting techniques, I think he's finally lighting on what a lot of people are trying to tell me in other comments. He's all, I might have made the same comments in reviewing the previous episode, but it is worth emphasizing the quality of vocal characterization when you have an interaction of all these different characters. Great job managing the shift from voice to voice, whether it was a feat of editing or live delivery. It is fantastic because the rhythm of conversation is really natural and textured. And then he's all, I just threw in the word textured. I can't really back that up. Still, quite good. So, I mean, I'm saying, a feat of editing or live delivery. It is fantastic because the rhythm of conversation is really natural. I was telling another pen friend recently, what did I say? Because I was talking to her about what Tito was saying, and I had a response to it. So I was saying, well, what can I say? I've been practicing this stuff most of my life, about 40 years at least. I guess I got better at it. Paying attention to how small groups interact, taping it, and replaying it a zillion times helps too. Because, yeah, I wasn't just paying attention to how, you know, movies and TV shows and fictional characters would, like, have dialogue and interact. I was taping a lot of real-life interaction and dialogue. So, yeah, I would get used to how the change in speech patterns would happen somehow. I wouldn't be able to explain how it is, you know, I'm not Professor Higgins, but... Oh gosh, yeah, there's this Blippi Vert, she went by this on YouTube. Cute, love how you interpolate and add in elements to the original characters in the original show, especially love Victoria swearing off turtlenecks. That was nice, she just spoke up just once on YouTube, I was really pleased by that. I'd love to get to know Blippi Vert more, you know, please feel free to write me. Let's see, who was this? 2015... I thoroughly enjoyed this, especially the humorous references to kitchens, doctor bags, and the supernatural ability to perpetually stay awake. I was so glad you picked up on those. I'd love to hear more about the sedatives in Julia's bed, which she always seems to have an overabundant and everlasting supply. I loved all the sleepless references, such as talks in the middle of the night, and something in the coffee keeping us awake, and never got a wink of sleep. I loved the surprise question, there's a kitchen? Yeah, that comes up. So yeah, starting with all these comments starting to give stuff away. Oh yeah, with Tingler, 2015 too, asking about the host like doing an adequate job of catching the audience up with what we missed in Dark Shadows. And Tingler says, now the hosts did indeed do a marvelous job glazing over the slow, ever so slow show to bring us up to date. Plus they gave good humor while doing it. See, and we haven't gotten to that part. We're already, you know, like, because there's some stuff where I figure out, you know, after falling in love with Willie Lubis by episode 13, 14, like allowing him back into Colin Wood and into my show as well, it's like, oh, I gotta deal with this. And then figuring out that Wadsworth and he could know each other in 1954 if Willie was a lot younger and certain circumstances permitting. But yeah, we're back with taking care of Victoria in her room. Which, that's what's funny. Victoria Winter's room at the Great House, I guess, was Josette's back in the day. But I'm still tripping because Josette's room, aquamarine room with many ornate fixtures, as Hecubus says in an episode, that's Josette's old house room. Her great house room is like yellow, I think. Like, what a difference. Elizabeth's explaining the chamber pot to Carolyn. And because Carolyn's like worried, like, hey, you know, she thinks she's from the 1790s or that she was in the 1790s. Maybe she could have a chamber pot under her bed. And Elizabeth shocks Carolyn by saying, hey, you know what? I found out there is one down there. So I guess that's Josette's chamber pot. Like, she doesn't say that. But now that I'm explaining that Victoria Winter's room was Josette's room in the 1790s in the Great House. So yeah, it was probably Josette's chamber pot. And Elizabeth said, would you like to check to see if there really is a chamber pot down there? And Carolyn shudders, no. Elizabeth says, neither do I. That's why it's there. Roger showed it to me when we were children to scare me. And frankly, it still does. Carolyn is pondering, I wonder if there's one under my bed or David's. And Elizabeth says, I used to wonder the same thing when I was your age. And you know what? I still do. I don't look under there for any reason. When old mapmakers found unknown territories of land they didn't know what to do with, they wrote, here be dragons. As far as I'm concerned, under the bed there be worse things. Getting chamber pots, it's just totally gross. So Victoria moans because she's still kind of tripping out on her time travel thing. And Victoria asks, Vicky, would you like some water? And so Victoria obviously thinks, is it clean? Because back then water wasn't really filtered, like through a Brita or whatever. Carolyn wonders, oh, clean? Why would... Oh, yes, it's clean. Like, because she knows, like, what Victoria's thinking. Like, oh, well, yeah, you can have all these filtration devices. And now we can just turn on the tap water and get a fresh glass of water. And then I start to add All the Time in the World from the Time Machine soundtrack. Because, yeah, Victoria can time travel. That's pretty much her theme in The Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. So you hear this music, and it should, like, it sparks in some people, like, oh my gosh, that soundtrack, I know what's going on. And Elizabeth tells Victoria, don't you worry about that, my dear. And Victoria says, it didn't make any sense. There was a man, and he was sitting in a machine with a jeweled lever at the front of him and a great spinning disc at the back. Meaning that's George from the Time Machine. He was the time traveler. Carolyn, that is strange. Did he do anything? And Victoria drinks water and pauses. He looked more surprised to see me than I was to see him, and he bloody well ought to have been. Because it's like, so he's basically coming back from the Morlocks and the Eloi and all that, and somehow Victoria coming back to the 60s, and he's going back to 1899... So they kind of pass each other in time and just kind of go, whoa, what the heck? And that's about it. So she saw he was more surprised to see me than it was to see him. Because she kind of knows, like, this is incredible, this is crazy. Whereas George is like, I'm in a machine that does this. Why should I see some random girl, you know, from somewhere in between time and space, like, floating through my sight? So yeah, he's going to be more surprised because it isn't what he invented the machine to be able to do. But there she is, just floating through time, the way he's floating backwards through time to 1899 again. So, Elizabeth says, here, I'll put that glass down, and you go right to sleep, Victoria. You look exhausted. I'm sure she is. And then Hagibus, meanwhile, Barnabas and Dr. Hoffman have returned to the foyer to say goodnight to Roger, because they're going to go off. And Roger's like, going off so soon, you two? Barnabas, it's nearly 1 a.m, Roger. And Roger, I know, you usually don't retire until dawn, because Roger pays attention to what the heck Cousin Barnabas has been up to. And Barnabas, slight snicker, well, I suppose you could call me a night owl, Roger, except, and here's where, if you think I don't give Hoffman enough credit, I'm giving her stuff that I came up with, you know, when I was a kid, some of my best jokes ever, except, since most owls are up at night anyway, saying night owl is completely redundant, because if owls are up at night anyway, why are they night owls? They're already up at night, and we all know that. And so Roger says, exactly, I suppose you're both off again to the old house. And Hoffman's like, well, I don't know, I suppose I ought to. And Roger, but for that little something you're not telling us, eh, Doctor? Because Roger's figured out that Dr. Hoffman isn't too fond of Wadsworth. Roger exits, Barnabas sneering, I thought so, Dr. Hoffman, you don't like my valet. And Hoffman's like, oh, Wadsworth, he's all right, I guess, but... Yes, Barnabas. And they're, like, in the foyer talking about this before they go back to the old house. Hoffman, he's continually fiddling with my laboratory and bringing down odd ingredients that I don't need, because that's, like, kind of the Dr. Frankenfurter version of Wadsworth, where he knows all this stuff. And Barnabas, well, I must admit, I thought that extra order of CO2 was a tad on the excessive side. And Hoffman, oh no, I ordered that. What? Don't look at me like that. Which is a good line to have in a radio drama. It's a good way of understanding that one character is noticing that another character is looking at her oddly, and you don't know that because you can't see them. You have to imagine them in your mind. So there's all kinds of bits of dialogue to help impress upon the listener what's going on physically. And she says, don't look at me like that. I like dry ice. It helps me to concentrate. You know, we should be on our way. Now, you know, I like dry ice. It helps me to concentrate. That was so many jokes when we were watching the original Dark Shadows. It's like, there she is with some big pot. And to make it look like it's doing something scientific, She's throwing this big ice cube in it. I know what that is, because my mom would use that for Halloween setups at our house, you know, when I was growing up. She knew what dry ice was, and I knew what dry ice was, and people can kind of get it if they know where to go. It makes things bubble and makes things foggy, and it's incredible stuff. But it's also known as CO2, and so that's why Barnabas calls it that. Oh, that order of CO2 tad on the excessive side. And then Hoffman, that's not something that has to admit that Wadsworth didn't order that, she did, because we saw on the show she was always using that stuff with tongs. You want to do that or else it'll burn your fingers, so you know you want tongs to place that stuff in liquid. And yeah, so she, you know, we get the heckle of Dr. Hoffman saying in the show, I like dry ice, it helps me to concentrate, which why else would she be using so much in the laboratories, you know? And that's something me and O'Shane would talk about too, just making fun of like the special effects when we know what it is. It's like, why is there oscilloscope? Why? Oh, well, what does it even tell? I don't even remember. Maybe I should pause this and look up oscilloscope to figure out what the heck that was about. Now, I keep thinking that it had to do with some sort of atom experiment or bringing atom to life or whatever it was, but oscilloscope. O-S-C-I-L-L-O-S-C-O-P. An oscilloscope, formerly scope or O-scope, is a type of electronic test instrument that graphically displays varying voltages of one or more signals as a function of time. Their main purpose is capturing information on electrical signals for debugging, analysis, or characterization. The displayed waveform can be analyzed for properties such as amplitude, frequency, rise time, time interval, distortion, and others. Originally, calculation at these values required manually measuring the waveform against the scales built into the screen of the instrument. Modern digital instruments may calculate and display these properties directly. Oscilloscopes are used in the sciences, engineering, biomedical, automotive, and the telecommunications industry. General purpose instruments are used to maintenance of electronic equipment and laboratory work. Special purpose oscilloscopes may be used to analyze an automotive ignition system or to display the waveform of the heartbeat as an electrocardiogram, for instance. Yeah, I mean, that's so much techno babble. So it would make sense with the Adam character and trying to figure out a Frankenstein monster and all that. So it kind of makes sense, but it's like, oh, crap that your dad has in the garage back in the day. It sort of is what when you recognize an oscilloscope, like, that's what that is. But yeah, some of the stuff in the laboratories, I remember O'Shea saying, oh, let's go to the toaster oven to see what it says. Yeah, it pretty much just all this junk in it. Whatever laboratory was in the basement of the old house, it just, you know, you just get so, like, wiped out by trying to figure out, like, what? Is this special effects in the 60s? I think it is. It's initially impressive, especially if you're not, you know, too worried about precision. But yeah, Dr. Hoffman likes dry ice, and we all kind of knew that, and that's me heckling the actual character of the show. There was something else coming up. Milligan says, Wadsworth currently in the laboratory at the old house is drafting a potion. Wait, that. And he talks about something that happened in the first episode where there was like the crashing glass. That looks like my potion. What's he doing with my potion? How did he get the formula? And Hecubus, like, it makes a noise. And Milligan, exasperated, Hecubus, you didn't. You couldn't. You destroyed my potion in the last installment. Because it was like, that's why it's so dark in here. You know, he's knocked over the potion and broke it. No, Master, of course it's not your potion. I wouldn't have made a switch or anything like that. And Milligan calls Hecubus evil, once again. And then Wadsworth starts singing I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles. I'm not going to do it again, but yeah, you know, I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles, because I figured Wadsworth is going to sing. And eventually he gets to that in episode 4 with all Rocky Horror stuff. But this is like his practice of getting a good singing voice from Milligan's potion. But somehow Hecubus was able to get to him. Then, as he's singing that, Hoffman is mocking, like, she's clapping, but she's mocking Wadsworth. Oh, do go on, you singing fool. How wonderful. Why don't you join a barbershop quartet and leave this ghastly house? And Wadsworth tells her, Madam, I can think of only one ghastly thing currently in this house, meaning Dr. Hoffman, to him. And Hoffman says, oh, do tell me, Wadsworth. Maybe I can get it to vacate the premises, because she's thinking Wadsworth is the ghastly thing in the house. And Wadsworth says, ah, no, madam, allow me. And then he basically, what he's doing is picking her up, putting her over his shoulder, and running up the stairs with her. And she's all, ah, what are you doing? Put me down. And he climbs a step. Madam, I am merely keeping the house tidy. Now, if you would please stop struggling, up we go to the front hall. And Barnabas noticed, oh, Wadsworth, I see you have things taken care of, as usual. Having fun, doctor? And Hoffman's like, Barnabas, tell him to put me down. And Barnabas, my dear, you can see he's only doing his job. Barnabas, if you don't have him put me down right now, you can forget about my finishing the experiment, meaning the Adam stuff. And Barnabas says, oh, but I already have. And Hoffman asks, what? You see, Julia, after seeing that you have so little regard for the help I hire, meaning Wadsworth, in keeping this place shipshape, your various threats over the weeks and your little visits to the Gumshoe Peterson in his law office, I've decided it may be simpler to hire another doctor and dispose of you. And then there's a sound of needles skidding off of the record. And Milligan says, what? He can't do that. That's not in the script. And Hecubus starts laughing. And Hoffman says, I can't believe it. And Barnabas, smilingly, fooled you, didn't I? Wadsworth put her down. And that's him getting back at Hoffman for the postum joke. Because Hoffman said, fooled you. And so now Barnabas is saying, fooled you. Because it's like, oh, I was going to tell you, you know, tell you that I'm just letting him off you, but I'm not going to, I'm just playing with your head, just like you played with my head, with the postum, not coffee. So Wadsworth puts her down, and Hoffman's huffily, well. And Barnabas says, you hardly thought I'd let you get away with that postum joke, did you? And Wadsworth acclaims, he puts down his foot, it's like, I wouldn't have. Hoffman, all this fuss over a coffee substitute for Pete's sake. And so the name Pete is in there, so I figured this is a perfect time to break another wall and have Peter Bradford show up and, yeah, someone called me? Bradford, yeah, someone called me? And Milligan says, no, too soon, you go away, forget that you're Peter Bradford. And Bradford says, will do. And Hecubus says, Master, you are evil. I always wondered how he lost his memory, meaning that Peter Bradford became Jeff Clark because Peter Bradford, you know, either by possession or reincarnation, lost the previous memory of being Peter Bradford. So he became Jeff Clark instead. And boy, what a dull name. And so then Milligan says, Hecubus, shush. And Hoffman says, I've had it with you all. I'm off to bed. And she slams the door of the old house and goes back to the great house. And Barnabas says, that was quite an interesting feat to Wadsworth. I have a hard time believing you really had much concern over my choking her so much. Now, that's the thing. Wadsworth is starting to lay into Barnabas about mistreating people. And that was the thing. It's like, you're going to choke somebody that much. I mean, you're just like prolonging the agony of having to deal with these characters so angry at each other and just being abusive to each other. And Wadsworth says, sir, that choking business is very serious because it's totally different. You know, choking somebody so that they can't breathe is a little different than picking them up and, you know, carrying up the stairs. By picking her up and getting her up the stairs, that was just plain funny. And Barnabas laughing, all right, yes, it was. And Wadsworth, relieved, sir, I've made an effort to clean your staring window if you'd like to make use of it. Because, yeah, he would always do that. We'd see that. And he's, like, just wandering over to this window and just staring through it to make an effect for the soap opera. It's like, just great, we have these long shots of Barnabas staring through this window and thinking about Maggie Evans, and it's like, ugh, just you and your damn staring window. Which, at the Great House, there was another one that people would usually go, and there was I always think of it as Elizabeth's staring window, but she'd, like, open it sideways or whatever. Whereas this one is, like, obviously a lattice thing going, and so I think in the original version of episode 2, it was more Barnabas saying, oh, my staring window, how I love you, how I've missed you. But then I realized he wouldn't say that. Let's rearrange it so it's Wadsworth saying, I've cleaned your staring window, sir, if you'd like to make use of it. So the joke is still there. It's just said in a different, more subtle way. Now there's the staring window. So when he says that, Barnabas gets a little perturbed. He's like floaty and then perturbed. Ah, yes, what? And Wadsworth, the one you used to bring your young lady to remember you. What are you talking about? Because he's like, well, what do you mean? Like, just, I'm going to use my staring window for what? Don't try to fool me, sir, says Wadsworth. I told you I know enough. And then Barnabas is irritable. Then explain it. And so Wadsworth says, well, here for the beauty of a darkened teal sky and wispy curtains. Because, yeah, you notice through the windows they have the teal sky. Like, if you're walking down the hallway of the Haunted Mansion and you're looking out those windows and you're just like, oh, man, this is like being in the old house. It's kind of like that. So what do you think of when you look out of your staring window? And then Barnabas finally remembers floating again. Oh, yes, Maggie. You know, because that was what he was doing before Wadsworth showed up. And getting her to remember the past or whatever. Milligan, meanwhile, at the Evans abode, and Maggie sort of starts to wake up. Hmm? Oh, why can't I sleep? That dream, it's troubling me again. But is it a dream? I was someplace so close but so far away, like another place. But it looked like here, like a different time, meaning it's the same place, different time. And that's what she's remembering. And Sam is like, Maggie, are you all right? And Maggie's like, Pop, yes, Pop, I'm all right. And Sam, coffee's on the perk if you want some. Now, here we go. And Maggie says, well, why not? I might as well. I can't sleep anyway. I do wonder why. And this comes from heckling Dark Shadow so much, where it's like, dude, you guys, you're so stressed out. Maybe you should drink less coffee. Jeez Louise. And so, yeah, we're just going to go with the context of this whole coffee thing. And Sam says, exactly. I keep brewing the stuff and it doesn't make any difference. I keep getting more and more fidgety because that's what happens with freaking caffeine. Nobody seems to know it. Then I tried some of the coffee of the Blue Whale and that didn't help either. Jovially, should put some whiskey in it, maybe. And Maggie says, time enough for that. Pop. And Sam asks, what? Did you ever finish that portrait Mr. Collins wanted? And Sam says, oh, ages ago. I was considering going around to see him, though I'm not sure why. It's awfully late. And Maggie says, I'll go with you. And he's all, what, just like that? She's all, well, not until I finish this cup anyway, because we're just so used to drinking all this stuff all the time. And this was the part when I said, don't listen to this show on a treadmill, because I was just walking to work and I nearly fell down. There is a block. If I go there with somebody, I can tell you, this is where it was. This is where I was listening to my second episode, and I was laughing so much. With this conversation, I nearly fell down. I truly did. Walking to the bus to get to work. But yeah, it's like, Maggie says, there was something. She says, this line, this is where I was just about to lose it and, you know, fall down. Maggie's like, me too. I keep drinking cup after cup of coffee all day, and I just can't seem to relax. Even out of context, people laugh at that one. And it just... So I'm so grateful when I see that or I hear that, you know, see and hear it. And of course, you know, Maggie's like, yeah, I'll go with you, you know, whatever time it is. Let's go to the old house and hang out with Mr. Collins. And it's like, what, just like that? And she's all, not till I finish this cup anyway, because, yeah, we got to just keep drinking this coffee. Milka says, back at the old house. And Wadsworth, well, now that you've managed to summon her again, meaning that's what Barnabas was doing at a staring window, and that she's thought of him, and it's like, well, let's go around to see him, blah, blah, blah. Perhaps you could do a little explaining while we wait. Now, again, Wadsworth is going to be defending people that Barnabas has hurt over time. Like, he was just doing it with Dr. Hoffman, who was also explaining stuff with, you know, Maggie, I guess. Now, trying to figure that out, Barnabas says, oh, and he's all, a few things, sir. I suppose it is just as well that I give her these earrings. You already said you were going to, says Barnabas. And Wadsworth says, but do you understand why, sir? Barnabas says, of course, they were Josette's, and likely belonged to someone who resembles her anyway. It's not a worry to me if you insist. Wadsworth, no, it is because you never forced her to see them or wear them. And Barnabas, you know, and what does that mean? It means all that is in her may form an associative memory with something that has no other troubling memory clouded over it, sir. So basically, Wadsworth is saying, since these belong to Josette, and if Maggie remembers that she, in a previous life, was Josette, and it has nothing to do with the kidnapping, these earrings, then, okay, it's gonna make her remember something, which I felt like we saw in the actual show, where she's just getting mesmerized by these earrings, and Willie secreted them somewhere, I think, in Maggie's bedroom, so she could find them and trip out, rather than Wadsworth being able to do it in his own way. So that's why I gave this task to Wadsworth, like, in exchange for Willie having done it in the original show. Then Barnabas says, I see, and then intense curiosity. Why do you want this? Because, yeah, why would Wadsworth want this other than just being altruistic? And Wadsworth does say, well, you are my employer, sir, and I do wish that, as such, he has what he desires. But peaceably and not forcibly, if you catch my meaning. Meaning, you don't force people to do stuff. You might find out that they want to do it anyway if you just encourage them. And Barbara says, if you could do that. And Wadsworth asks, it would be good, sir. And Barbara says, no, it would be spectacular. Any other unbelievable questions before she arrives? And Wadsworth admits, well, as I've spent some time polishing silver, there is one bit I was interested in. Oh, my cane. How is that compelling to question me about? And Wadsworth, now that I know that he's known Willie, it's ready to go back in time, you know, back to an earlier episode, and do a little rewrite where he requests information about Willie from his employer, Barnabas Collins. He says, I think there's a little evidence of Mr. Loomis on it, meaning on the cane. Care to make a comment, sir? And Barnabas, annoyed, you don't know enough. You know too much. And Wadsworth says, well, you might calm yourself when you realize I have your better interests in mind, because Wadsworth does. I understand that he may not have been the most superior underling in the course of matters, but have you considered that he was already rather abused to begin with? And Barnabas admits, a bit. And Wadsworth says, see anything similar in yourself there, sir? Because I'd already done that in episode 14, where Wadsworth is telling Willie Loomis, don't you see something similar in Barnabas Collins with yourself, like the being abused part? And so, yeah, it gets kind of crazy with this kind of thing.
And so, yeah, let's compare the two. There's the episode 14 and the episode 2. The episode 14 is Wadsworth comparing Barnabas to Willie. And episode 2 is Wadsworth comparing Willie Loomis to Barnabas Collins. To Barnabas, telling him. So let's see if we can go to the both of them. So, Wadsworth says to Barnabas about Willie Loomis, but have you considered that he was already rather abused to begin with? Barbas, a bit. See anything similar in yourself there, sir?
Oh, yes, I'm afraid I do.
Yes, so rather than concern yourself with him writing memoirs to betray you, because I remember there was some line somewhere where, Will Loomis is at Wycliffe writing his memoirs, you know, like, about me or whatever, and it's like, no, dude, he probably isn't, but it was just a good thing to give Wadsworth because Barnabas had said it in the original show.
Don't you think you might have put some credit in his way? All right, Barnabas asked Wadsworth. How?
Well, you will have to come to terms with the fact that, though he was accused of kidnapping Maggie Evans, it wasn't really him alone, was it?
Barnabas, growly. Are you trying to catch me out somehow, or are you just queer all around? And then get to me with the word usage. Wadsworth, thank you for saying it the old-fashioned way, sir. It's been a while since I've heard it. But no, I wouldn't keep your mind on the same lady if I felt she was in any real harm again.
And what time of harm do you expect from me? Barnabas asked.
Well, the cane, sir. Got a little carried away with something that is meant to help carry you, yes?
And Barnabas asks, all right, what difference does that make?
Wadsworth,
well, beating servants is rather an old concept, you see.
So he's telling him, hey, you lived in the 1790s, and this thing is just not done these days in the 1960s.
You want to make sure you don't give yourself away with how much age you really have acquired, do you?
Meaning, if you're from the old world, people are going to freaking figure it out if you're beating servants now the way that you did in the 1790s. That's not going to work.
That's his practical way of saying, don't do that.
And Barnabas, usual superior assumption of absurd suggestion that just seems so here.
Astounding, you do have a way of expressing things, Wadsworth. Suppose now that I've given Miss Winters the music box, that I should take it away and try giving it to Miss Evans again?
No, but I believe you ought not to pursue Miss Winters again.
And this is where we get to Wadsworth understanding that Victoria Winters might be an actual relative. Don't do that. She might be related to Elizabeth Collins Stoddard, etc., etc.
But to get to the comparison of he's just said, hey, did you think that Lee Loomis might have been abused to begin with? Does it remind you of anyone? And comparing it to what Wadsworth says to Willie in episode 14, because that's one of the reasons that I altered a few things in episode 2, with Wadsworth saying similar things to Barnabas Collins.
And so when he's giving Willie the calming herbal tea, Wadsworth says to Willie about Barnabas,
well, if you ever wondered why he became so tragic, it might have been for the same reason that you did.
So here we go with the comparison, Willie.
Oh?
Wadsworth?
Yes. You know, you've hardly been treated very well, and you likely got the idea that such behavior was both normal and natural.
Which is what a lot of people who go through abuse start believing, that this is just what everybody goes through in regular life or family life. It's like, this is how I get treated, therefore it's got to be how a lot of kids at school get treated by their parents or by their families or whatever. And so it's that same thing. You just presume that's just the normal and natural way to get treated. And you find out later, oh, maybe it's not. And so Willie is already darkly asking Wadsworth,
oh, isn't it though?
And Wadsworth says, I suppose in some regard, but my point is, do we really want that? And Willie, scoffing laugh,
I getcha. But I ain't convinced.
Wadsworth, I see, Mr. Loomis. Of course, these things take time. So, yeah, he's saying that to Barnabas, didn't you understand that Willie was a little abused to begin with? And that's episode 2. And in 14, Wadsworth is asking Willie, if you ever wondered why he, Barnabas, became so tragic, it might have been for the same reason that you did, because you have hardly been treated very well, and you likely got the idea that such behavior was both normal and natural. So, like, the both of them might just assume, this is the way that life is, or this is the way that I get treated, therefore this is the way a lot of people get treated, and you just sort of presume it's normal and natural, and that's just the way it is in life. And Wadsworth is asking, it isn't, though. That's not what we want, and it's not what should be, and it's not what ought to be. So that in between episode 2 with Wadsworth explaining stuff to Barnabas about Willie, and in episode 14 with Wadsworth explaining stuff to Willie about Barnabas, he's comparing the two of them. And that's what makes Wadsworth the perfect go-between, that he's a man of service, but in a sense of nobility close to Barnabas Collins anyway. So he's like this perfect go-between with like the old rules and the new rules, that kind of thing. Someone might ask, well, why would Wandsworth want to help either of these men? Why did he want to do all this stuff at Hill House? If he is the good guy in Clue the movie, he would want to help people.
very naturally. He would be upset about the suicide of his wife. He'd want to make amends. He'd want to find some way, as a butler, to get everything moving in the right direction. And that is just the way that it is. So, yeah, that's, to me, the role of Wadsworth from Clue the movie, the way he would be in any story, which is definitely is in The Pits of Ultimate Dark Shadows. The butler who gets it all done. And so when Barnabas figures out what Wadsworth is saying, comparing the two of them, Barnabas and Willie Loomis, it's like he just sort of sums it up. You mean I should withhold my anger for the sake of others? And Wadsworth says, that would be a better reason. But what with your history, I wasn't sure you would find it as practical. The practical reasons appeal to people more. Usual superior assumption of absurd suggestion. Astounding. You do have a way of expressing things, Wadsworth. Suppose now that I've given Miss Winters the music box that I should take it away and try giving it to Miss Evans again. No, but I believe you ought not to pursue Miss Winters again. Oh, and why is that? Barnabas asks. Although many generations' connections may dispel any real worry over relationships, I still think that she is a little too close for comfort in your regard. What do you mean? Do you know something about Miss Winters that would make her a family? I only know it's a stronger possibility than anyone realizes. I have been to the main house and seen enough from Mrs. Stoddard to know that she suggests a connection, a very strong connection, sir. And Barnabas kind of figures it out somewhat sadly. Cousin Elizabeth, that is an awkward thing to carry. So he's kind of starting to realize, okay, Victoria Winters might be a child of Elizabeth, da-da-da. And Wadsworth says, yes, and it might be nice for you to take off that hypnotizing spell over your cousin Caroline, sir. I'm sure the kind of awkwardness of being so close to a relative isn't all that light on her shoulders either. So Wadsworth, he's gone through, treat Dr. Hoffman better. Willie, you need to think about. Maggie, obviously, we're getting through that. And Caroline, too. So, yeah, we're adding a bunch of stuff to episode two. Milligan notices this too, and he explains to the audience, ah, sometimes the butler really does do it. And now that Dr. Hoffman has had her huff and come back to the main house for a snooze, she won't really get one, as Caroline needs to interrogate her via Barnabas's request, but then she magically and thankfully loses interest in doing so, bothering Dr. Hoffman about it. And this is something I added to way after the fact, years later, before I got the podcast going. Dr. Hoffman, Caroline asks, and Hoffman sighs, oh, you, trying to win a battle for your cousin again? Maybe you should stop sneaking around Peterson's office for my notebook and just let it be for once. Because I was remembering that was all the stuff going on in Dark Shadows, where Caroline was trying to get her notebook from Tony Peterson's office, etc., etc., but also still being interested in Tony. And Caroline says softly, you know, I think I can now, though I'm not sure why. Hoffman, annoyed, oh, that sounds like a trick. And Caroline says, no, really, can we just talk? Hoffman, incredulous, in the middle of the night, why not? Don't suppose you've brought any cookies to this pajama party. Sighs, very well, it is your house after all. Caroline, I just thought you might give me some solution to feeling rather unwell. You are a doctor, after all. And then Hoffman tries to go back to the historian thing. Actually, I'm a historian. Oh, never mind. What's the ailment? Caroline says, well, I'd definitely quit bothering you if I wasn't so submerged in Barnabas's own hypnosis, of course. But more to the point, I feel pretty seasick having gotten such a piercing hickey from a relative, because that was the thing. It's like he became the non-old man version of Barnabas again because he got her blood. Even if he is six generations removed, so she knows that she's had her blood drawn and he is kind of his younger self again. And Hoffman says, ah, well, I don't have a drug for that, but I think we can work something out. However, you really do like that Mr. Peterson, correct? And Carol says, oh, I suppose so. Well, no, I've always been curious about him, really. That's a good start, Hoffman says. Could get unspooked about the other problem by diving into a better relationship, and if Barnabas ever gets any better, maybe he'll finally feel some remorse over the whole thing. Heaven knows there's a lot of things he should already be sorry for. And Caroline, lengthily, no kidding. Hoffman, still, I'm not too pleased that my experiment turned him into an overage walking corpse. And it really did. And Caroline admits, yep, that was rather unpleasant to get close to, because he drew blood and it wasn't so... If it had been regular Barnabas, it might not have been so bad, but it was like old man Barnabas, so she was like, ew, she's getting gross out. So all the wrinkles and stuff, it just kind of gets on people's nerves, I guess. And Hoffman says, still, in all this, Caroline, I must admit you did come in at the wrong place at the wrong time. And Caroline admits, curing him from that experiment, I think I may have come in at the right place at the right time. Because when you think about it, she really did. It's like he was like all aged and wanting his vampiric youth back. And there is Caroline is, and it's like just bite. Immediately he gets better with her, what I called scintillating hemoglobin.
in her blood. And so Carolyn thinks of it as being at the right place at the right time. It changes the perspective of the whole thing. By the way, some of that stuff Barnabas told you about his past? Yes, Hoffman asks. If Victoria did just come out of the past, I'm guessing his story wasn't all that accurate, huh? Because he talked about Josette being betrothed to his uncle, and he didn't believe in that, and there were all these things that got reworked out in the 1790s period of Dark Shadows that had very little to do with what he was explaining to people in earlier episodes of the Dark Shadows series. Carolyn's saying, hey, maybe it wasn't all that accurate because Victoria knows all this other stuff, and Hoffman asked her, why do you say that, Carolyn? I was in her room, and not only did she explain a lot of it half asleep, she explained even more of it in her sleep. You think he, Barnabas, just gone mad from his own time travel problems? And Hoffman says, that and being a vampire. Because that's a problem, too. There's a duality of major issues. Plus the length of it. It's not like he was in bed for a year or something. I've seen people gone mad from shorter comas because Barnabas is in the coffin for like 170 plus years. Yeah, that's like a long time. Carolyn says, well, I guess it's all well and good that he's not a mummy or something. That would be even more shocking. And I know people have asked, why would it be more shocking if he wasn't a vampire and he was a mummy? Well, they're really stinky. And mummies, we don't know a whole lot. I mean, there's movies, horror movies and such. I don't know what, like, the folklore understanding is of, like, mummies in these kind of stories. So it's just, I think of them as, like, smelly and gross and decaying. And it's like you can't drink blood to get better. Just mummies are mummies, and they get gross, and they keep on decaying over time. Carolyn says that would be even more shocking. And Hoffman says, yes, and I have to wonder, why don't you ever have one of those around here, too? And I had to ask that myself. And Milligan says, the doctor has a point. We've been wondering that as well. Why aren't there any mummies in Collinsport as far as the TV show goes? And that's when Hecubus steps in. Well, there is one in a Dark Shadows paperback, but then we do mostly keep to the TV show here, other than our own inventive alterations. And now return to the old house for a random hangout session between the Evans and their slowly regrown friendship with the old house for whatever reason. So I think this is one of the last scenes in episode 2. The Evans come over, and so knock knock, footsteps, door opening. Wadsworth, good evening, Mr. Evans, Miss Evans. Sam, hello. Well, Regal staff, shiver my top tails. That's a surprise, because he wasn't expecting to see Wadsworth. And then he kind of gets confused, although I'm not sure why I made such a nautical outburst about it. And I love that when I look back at everything, because it's almost like before I'd even decided that Captain Greg and the Ghost of Mrs. Mirror was going to show up, it's like him saying, shiver my top tails. I'm not sure why I made such a nautical outburst about it. It's almost like we know that Captain Greg and the Ghost of Mrs. Mirror are going to show up eventually. So it's fun in that way. Just because when I looked at Shiver My Top Tails, like, I wanted Sam to kind of critique his own announcement of that. And then I did, and it's like, whoa, nautical outburst or whatever. Wadsworth says, I should say not indeed, sir. Please come in. And Maggie says, Pop, I told you Barnabas got new help recently. You've been working too long with those Steinbeck projects. How are you ever going to know what the West Coast seaside looks like? Our sunsets are entirely different from their sunsets because you get to the East Coast of the U.S. or the West Coast of the U.S. The West Coast, you go to the beach, that's where the sun sets. East Coast, that's where the sun rises because of just the way that the land works and where the sun is coming up and where it's going down. So yeah, just that kind of geography thing. And somebody actually was really good about that, asking me, like, whoa, I needed to know that. Sam asks, why is that? And Wadsworth explains, because, sir, this ocean opposes the land on different sides. We wake to look at the sun rising over the ocean. They finish their days with the sun setting over the ocean. And Sam says, Well, it really makes no difference in Monterey. The shore is just a big basin, because with Steinbeck and you go to Monterey, it is this big basin. I mean, going there, it's like, where is it going down? You know, I'm looking around just going, yeah, I don't even know where the sun's going down. I know it's setting. Things are getting dimmer and dimmer, but I don't see it setting over the ocean, and also even rising over the ocean. So it was really weird in Monterey. It's just like, yeah, it's just a big basin, and you don't know, like, where the sun is exactly. Other than in the middle of the day, you can kind of see it if you look up, and you shouldn't look at the sun at all. And Wadsworth, oh yes, you are correct, sir. And Sam says, I like this new butler. Wadsworth, valet, sir. Well, I suppose it makes little difference, because we're never sure if it's a butler or valet. In Clue, the movie's a butler, but Barnabas has hired him personally, so maybe he he's more a valet. Like, maybe it's more like the Jeeves thing in Jeeves and Wooster, or the P.G. Woodhouse stuff. I've recently learned that it should not be Woodhouse, it should be Woodhouse, because of the way that things are pronounced.
pronounced in England, etc., etc. So maybe we'll be able to fix that in future radio drama episodes of The Pit. I don't know. Sam says, yes, butler, valet, housekeeper. The works say Mr. Collins needs all the help he can get in one neat package. Barnabas, this is true, Mr. Evans. Oh, it is delightful to see you both. Sam, ah, Mr. Collins, I suppose you can't sleep either. I swear there is something in the coffee around here that's keeping us all awake. And Barnabas covers a burp, as long as it truly is coffee, because he already had the post-it thing going with Dr. Hoffman. Please come in. Sit down. Wadsworth, do you suppose you could attend to our wakefulness, sir? Well, you see, you do seem to work miracles. I'm wondering if you perhaps had a suggestion to make, meaning something that wouldn't keep them all awake, like some sort of drink. And Wadsworth smiling, well, I do have an old family blend I can work with now that the kitchen is in order. Steps out, and Maggie surprised, there's a kitchen? And Barnabas admits, well, it was a bit antiquated. Willie did some of the wall and window maintenance, as well as some of the plumbing, when there was a moment handy, rare as that's been. Then Wadsworth took on the various details of replacing the equipment and having it installed properly. Sam, what, him, really? He seems like he wouldn't want to get his hands dirty, much less his shirt. Because, yeah, Wadsworth is pretty darn eloquent, so yeah. Willie doing this, like, hands-on stuff is more believable than Wadsworth doing it. Barbara says, oh, no, no, he didn't do everything. There was a lot of direction and people hired here and there, so other people got their hands dirty and Wadsworth was just sort of supervising. And Maggie says, as I look around this place, it all just seems to blossom as it used to. So that's her having a flashback, as Joe said. And Sam's like, eh? And Barnabas, eager. Used to? Maggie's like, why, yes, you know, during the summertime and it warming up, I can recall all the flowers. Wait, what was I saying? Wheel squeaking, which when I did the show, like the sound effects of the show, it was like this granny cart, and I just sort of pushed it in this one area that we have tile, and to get the tea trolley to have some wheel noises, at least as far as I remember. Here you are, sir, says Wadsworth, all poured and prepared, a full pot, cream and sugar, meaning whatever blend he's got to give them. Well, my goodness, says Sam, a tea trolley, even if it is serving coffee. And the old porcelain service, too, says Maggie, remembering old things from Josette's time. And Barnabas asks, you, recognize the dishes? And Maggie says, of course, they... Oh, you must have had me over at some point in the last few months. That must be it, because she's not sure why she's remembering these things. Why are they familiar to her? And Wadsworth, Miss Evans, may I ask your assistance with the crumpets? Oh, Maggie asks, you need help with something? That's a surprise. I suppose I'll see about it just to find out what I could do to improve any tasks you have, because she doesn't believe he needs any help. I mean, he's just so self-sufficient, helping all these other people. So they go back behind in the kitchen somewhere, and steps door flapping. Wadsworth, it's a matter of lemon curd or jam, madam. Any preference? And Maggie says, you could have just asked me that, meaning we didn't have to come back here for you to ask me. He said, well, I suppose you have some inkling that I wanted a private moment. Maggie says, you haven't got that much of an interest in me, surely, because he figures he's asking her on a date or something. Not in that way, madam. However, there is a little something an old friend wished to bestow upon you. Unfortunately, it has to remain a secret from whom it came, but I can assure you that secret isn't me. Oh? Anything else I should know about it? It may conclude some of the odd recollections you've been having trouble with, or at least spark them. However, I ask you not to open this case, so he's handing her the case with the earrings in it, until you arrive in your own room at home in these late hours. And Maggie, you know, she's like, oh, she's getting this case for me. She's like, don't tell me. It'll open and it'll spring out like a joke can of peanut brittle, meaning, you know, like those cans of peanut brittle that, you know, they got something springing out of them. And Wadsworth chuckling, perhaps. Maggie, all right, thank you. Anyway, how about what we discussed we keep honest? And Wadsworth says, oh, yes. And she says, jam, please. And that's why another pen friend was kind of like, oh, well, I would lemon curd and clotted cream to go with it. And I agree. But yeah, I just had Maggie decide on jam anyway with the crumpets. And Wadsworth says knowingly, very good, madam. Steps. And then he pauses and says, mazel. Because that's, you know, shows it to pray. Madam, pause. Moselle. Madame Bazelle. So he makes a pause in between. That's just this Wadsworth thing when it comes to Josette. Because he says to everyone, Madame, most of the time. But with her, it's Madame, pause, Moselle. And then, Milligan, now that you're enthralled with chamber pots and coffee cups, I invite you back to the newer house, meaning the great house, also called the main house. But phone rings, someone answers, and the person who answers is Roger. And Roger is peeved. Good heavens, do you know what time it is? He asks the person on the phone. And in the script, it says Miss Cleo, but in the audio, no one knows. So there are people who have figured it out without me announcing Miss Cleo is talking. Boisterous Jamaican accent.
Don't go blindly through life. Let me use the power of the tarot to show the way. And Roger asks, what the devil? And Miss Cleo says, talk to me now for your free reading. And I had a hard time deciding what coffee song should I add to this. There wasn't that many to choose from, so I just went with Annette Hanshaw, You Are the Cream in My Coffee, as ending credits theme. All due respect to you, The Kids in the Hall, for Milligan and Hecubus, Clue the movie, 1980s film, George Powell's The Time Machine, because he was in there, encountering Victoria Winters, John Collette and Jan Kinbrovey, I think that was for
I'm Forever Blowing Bubbles song,
V having written it, Miss Cleo, which was the person calling Roger on the phone, the sadly defunct Makers of Postum, which I've heard that it's still kind of, somebody rehashed it, recreated it. Postum is still available somehow. And of course, Dark Shadows 1960s TV show. And any laughter, please let me know. Any little thoughts, thanks. So why don't we go to WordPress site with all the pieces and stuff. So Chamber Pots and Coffee Cups. Script for this episode originally posted on Separate Wedge page 11 February 2012 and then 14 February 2012 on fanfiction.net podcast version created and uploaded November 2013. So yeah, just figuring all that out. And it's because I eventually decided that I was going to make it into a podcast where I'm doing all the voices and inferences and music and sound effects and et cetera, et cetera. So trying to make it into a bona fide radio drama. And yeah, it took that long. From February of 2012 to November of 2013. So yeah, that's over a year. Well over a year or two. So it's kind of incredible, and hopefully everybody kind of understands how it all works. I need to get to the commentary for episode 2, which is the entire reason for sharing these works. Oh yeah, so he goes, because yeah, there was Hecubus saying that, you know, when Carolyn goes to bother Dr. Hoffman, she magically loses interest in doing so. And one fellow was like, that's so typical and funny. Not sure why I think so, just is overaged walking, just as overaged walking corpse. That just conjures memories of how Barnabas looked in the show. Great word use. It is interesting how casually they speak of vampires and time travel, like it's just the thing to do. Typical female banter, which, just like I don't understand women in real life, I don't always understand here. But that's probably just me. Love the quip about keeping to the TV show other than the than inventive alterations, because, yeah, Hecubus mentioned that there was a mummy in a Dark Shadows paperback. Without seeing the dishes, it's hard to know why they are significant. If the reason was mentioned subtlety... I missed it. Not surprising. Lemon curd rocks, just saying. Only recently recognized it from the commercials. The Annette Hanshaw song was great. I had never heard of her, but will definitely look for more recordings of her. Yeah, you can easily, because I think they're all public domain. I love those old songs, especially when they still have the vinyl noises that come with it. Turns out she has 4 albums available on something something, so somewhere that he could easily find it. Oh, okay, so here's Hidden Object. Going back to her discussion. She says, I enjoyed your creative way of saying Barnabas sucked the gal's blood. Piercing hickey, unquote. Lastly, I find listening to your audio work peaceful when I'm not laughing. You have a nice voice in its many roles, and it all runs smoothly. And then somebody, I'm sad I missed the Clue reference in the clip, though you gave it props at the end, so it must be there somewhere. The outro song and your short singing scene were my favorite parts in this one. But it's just Wadsworth there, so that's why Clue the movie gets in the all due respect list, because Wadsworth is there. Oh, yeah, another friend that I lost. Likes. Simon and Hecubus' fondness for Angelique. Of all the folks who could be on her side, I'm glad it's them. I love so many of the little things, I'd never be able to note them all, like Barnabas and Hoffman adjourning to the library we've never heard of, lavatories we flush on a whim, and of course, the postum. Your Liz is still the most flawless recreation, and I can never thank you enough for reminding me. I have always wondered why more people didn't love Roger, as I always will. We had that in common. We discovered that through my creation. Oh gosh, what was...
Yeah, it was a little sad through most of the comments. Episode 2 did get a lot of reaction, and what I find kind of unfortunate about it is that it was a product placement thing. It seemed like so many people would come to me reacting to just Postum. And it was weird, because that's almost like a commercial, like everybody's just reacting to a commercial.
I think maybe some people even just discuss that, oh, you know, like remembering a Postum commercial, like rather than just Postum drinking any, it was more, yeah, they just, there was something about that. And it was like, it kind of bums me out a little bit that it's like a product placement commercial is what most people are talking about when it comes to episode 2 and the bit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. It's like, it'd be funny if it wasn't so blaringly obvious how we react to commercials and how we react to products. And it just, it kind of makes me a little sad that there's so much emphasis on a product. There's just so much emphasis to the point where people who don't normally talk about what they like in a story or jokes or anything will stretch out and talk about a product. And it's not even like having fond memories of growing up with Postum. It's just like, oh, I remember it. You know, that's it. So much for the coffee substitute. Coffee makes you hyper, which isn't good. But coming down from it... sucks. Laugh out loud. Barnabas at his staring window seems to consider that, this is another pen pal, seems to consider that instead of having Maggie continue with good thoughts to all involved, maybe let her live with no memories at all of her past with Barnabas. Neither one can explain why caffeinated coffee is quite so addictive, but Sam thinks it's so much better now, and the employer making the employee deliver the goods, and Sam doesn't get the sun rising in one place and setting in California. Ah, aha. Coffee was a drug, and the gift was well received. Don't go through life blindly. Look into the tarot. I figure Roger thought Victoria was calling. Well, no, that's Miss Cleo. Piercing hickey for Carolyn. Ha ha ha. But it's okay. He's only 6 generations removed. And then she's laughing at that. And Myrrh, your Dr. Hoffman sounds eerily like the real Dr. Hoffman. Your Maggie and Sam are awesome. And I love the chamber pot analogies. Oh, and Wadsworth is so deliciously nasty and devilish when he says, and what's on your cane that belongs to Willie Loomis, sir? Oh, that is so, so good. Don't suppose you brought some cookies to this pajama party. Episode 2 took me back to the days when we only had one channel in Britain, BBC One. On a Sunday, we used to listen to Radio Free Europe and also to radio dramas like The Goon Show. Absolutely love your radio drama. It took a lot of work and is so creative, Daryl. It's one of the best I've ever heard. It took me back down memory lane, and for that I thank you. Much love and hugs, Myrrh. And not sure who this is. Oh yeah. So I think this is a younger person who reached out to me. She needed something to get her brain moving, and so I gave her episode 2 and the inquiry. So she said, unfortunately, I have yet to see any full episodes of Dark Shadows at all, unless I have and do not recall. So the catch-up gave a good picture of what was happening and what happened prior to this episode. The host catching me up was adequate enough for my taste. Laughing out loud, for whatever reason. I find discovering Julia Hoffman suddenly being a doctor a bit funny, especially the remarks by the others following her telling everyone she's a doctor. So she's also a historian, or is that just her canon profession? Either way, she's sure to come in handy, though I'm not terribly fond of her character. I may just be dull, but I don't believe I've heard that movie's tune before. But at the same time, I do. Maybe it was in a dream. Cue Twilight Zone music. Burst out laughing at the chamber pot reaction. As far as I'm concerned, under the bed there be worse things. Wadsworth is so amazing. Bradford's cameo will be forever embedded in my brain, and I will most likely wake during the middle of the day. I'm a bit of a night owl, ha. Huh? Singing about bubbles. Night Owl is redundant. I've never noticed before. Oh, Hecubus Q studio laugh and what can you do pose. I found the Sam and Maggie scene comical to say the least. It's hard to believe someone doesn't know the effects of caffeine, considering I basically craved anything with caffeine since I could walk, especially coffee. Ah, coffee and whiskey, I wonder. Slight angst from Barnabas was detectable, and I do love some good old-fashioned angst. Maybe I should look into a staring window. Actually, yeah, a lot of angst. Take it from the Time Lords. Time travel will make you crazy. I thought the next was a nice scene overall. Carolyn and Julia's conversation was amusing due to Julia's overall done with everyone around here attitude and Carolyn's calmer demeanor and voice. After Wadsworth explains the whole setting of the sun thing, that actually clears up some confusion on my part. Geography has always been a bit of a problem for me, considering I'm severely directionally challenged. I've gotta love Wadsworth. He's probably my favorite character. Coffee solutions. That little bit with Miss Cleo thrown in was perfect. It really brought the episode around. Best song choice ever for this episode. I nearly created my coffee in it, inshallah. The episode was really enjoyable, and I found myself bursting out laughing at a few points. Wadsworth's charm is visible even through audio, and I found myself falling in love with his character even more so than in the first episode. It was a truly good listen. So yay! And somebody listening just finished the second episode. Very much enjoying the old radio show feel. The musical interlude really drove that home without making it sound strained, as well as your vocal talent. Even though the introduction was long, it didn't feel long and came across as setting the tone. I am sure I missed jokes and references during the show, but we'll get more out of it when I listen to it again. I am a huge fan of fourth wall self-referential jokes and was chuckling along, but the cameo by Miss Cleo really brought it home for me. We'll check in again soon after listening to the third. Oh yeah, and then the other fellow, pen pal, helping me with sound effects, he says, I love the line about choking. Better use of sound effects than last episode, I think. Gotta enjoy the song playing during the phone call. He went so over the top with that. And then someone else, 2015. The title alone sold me on this episode. I have and never have liked coffee. Chamber pots even less, but I wanted to know what these kids in the hall obsessed creatures had to say. I listened a little more. I waited, then it hit me. This is garbage, but it smells really nice, and I am not one to turn my nose up at anything. The house was quiet. I laid on the floor and listened, and hit the repeat button until it was worse for wear. I still laughed at everything they said. Bad radio on the stereo, but I still listened and laughed. I wanted to tell people about this, but I couldn't find the courage to pick up the phone and make those lifeline calls. It's up to you to discover this. I'm only a map maker, and I'm truly bad at my trade. To quote Johnny Rotten, enjoy or die.
Yay, okay.
And the person who got bored back in the 60s with the soap opera not really going anywhere and the suspense is boring me and all that. The comment about the night owl and how it's redundant was quite clever. It made me wonder how that term came about. Hecubus switching Sir Simon's formula and Sir Simon realizing it was very comical, as was Wadsworth's threat of bodily removing Julia. And Wadsworth's lecture to Barnabas regarding beating his servants, Willie, was very good. His servant, Willie, was very good. Let's see. Really liked the sound effects. Pouring coffee, doors opening and closing, footsteps, and old-style telephone ring. It sounded as though it was done during the recording of the program, but I wondered if it was a recording. But no matter, it made the story more believable and interesting. I also loved the song at the end, Cream in My Coffee. Love those old songs, so charming. Very entertaining, Daryl, thank you. Yay! And Adam's Family Tree is back. From 2016, September. Right about now, we could use Marcus Welby's help. I'm not sure what he's referring to, but it is there, so that's nice. And Guiding Light. Loved Wadsworth's song. The scene at Evans Cottage was hilarious. Just keep downing that coffee, ladies. I keep thinking she was the one who said these people need some Sanka, but I can't find it anywhere here. Wadsworth has some keen insights for Barnabas at the steering window, that's for sure. The butler really does know everything. Oh, wait. There's some relative-on-relative action going on. Good talk to Dr. Hoffman and Carolyn Stoddard. Uh-oh. Will there be a mummy in the future? For the Evans coming to the old house, learning about Monterey and the sun setting over and under the ocean. That was great. That damn wakefulness, laugh out loud. Give these people some Sanka, meaning, like, yeah, decaf coffee. OMG, Miss Cleo, I totally forgot about her, so I am on the right track thinking Barnabas is after Maggie, ? Yes. Was there a reference to the time machine in there, ? When Victoria talks about coming back and seeing a man, more surprised to see me than I was to see him. And another pen pal who really hit it off. Person I don't know is discussed. People I don't know are discussed. I'm only a little evil, she thought, hopefully. I like how much fun you have with doing this. One good deed sets off another. Being attacked by a vampire could indeed be a life-changing event. I'm sorry. I think we all want to be of use. Probably need a vampire sound effect. Don't ask me what that would be, though. Flappy bat wings or the sound of a straw bringing up the dregs of a drink? Angelique sounds like your typical soap opera villainess. Actually, I have yet to wake up in bed with vampire, witch, or whatever. Obviously, I don't live right. I don't think vampires have to sleep, which must mean they get awfully bored in their coffins. My coffee substitute is chicory I grow. I don't like the smell of coffee, although I understand how it can get people in the morning. The smell stabs you in the nose. Scintillating hemoglobin on the yellow brick road? Scarecrow. It was jello. All vampires gotta have libraries. ideally lit by drippy candles on top of a harpsichord. I wouldn't call chamber pot scary. Stinky maybe, but not scary. Of course, dry eyes. It's an apparently creepy laboratory. Yay, again, for singing segments. Were there regular musical outbreaks in the original series, or is it purely your invention? Or did I ask that last time? So, yeah, I was like, well, sometimes it felt like there ought to have been, like somebody's gonna burst into song because they get so emotional. But no, as far as I know, nobody ever sang on the show. Maybe just, oh yeah, Sarah saying, how could I forget? That's terrible. It was like, should be embedded in my head. London Bridges. So yeah, there was a lot of singing of London Bridges falling down, which is irritated a lot of us because it was overdone. His ... staring window, she asks. Maybe you can't sleep because of having so much coffee. carried away by something that is meant to carry you. Nice turn of phrase, because, yeah, it's like Barnabas going off with his cane, and it's like, that's meant to carry you, not for you to get carried away with. I thought I didn't like needles. Hee hee. Zombies/mummies don't generally talk very much. That's probably why. Lemon curd. I don't think I've even had lemon curd, but it sounds good. I pick lemon curd over jam, at least once. Telephone's ringing. Tarot reading music? Funny. Oh, coffee-related song. So, yeah. So that's her take on episode 2. What else is with episode 2? Somebody says, fantastic. I just finished it. Yes, I laughed a lot. I really didn't listen to podcasts, but I absolutely love yours. You really take me back to that time, and I love your take on Dark Shadows. So I'm not sure who that was, but... 2017. Oh yeah, this is the person who eventually, got further and further away over time, but it took a little while, so she was still with me in 2017 for episode 2. This has been enormously helpful for... Yeah, I've read this before. I like Victoria's bit about never wearing turtlenecks after her hanging and the potty jokes. Who is that? Oh yeah, okay. Another pen pal. I'm still in touch with. So all the catch-up material was adequate, yes. For some reason, I didn't like Dr. Hoffman in the series. Yeah, there was that. She wanted lemon curd. Everybody's picking lemon curd over jam, like when they're given the choice. People make a lot of comments about all the coffee consumed on the show. And back then, people drank it all day. My great-grandmother always had a cup going all day. Let's see. I have a staring window, too. And Wadsworth, he should treat... servants, telling Barnabas he should treat servants better, or be found out in age. As for Julia and Carolyn, that scene, hey, can't get past the Julia thing. Carolyn was pretty dippy, too. Miss Cleo probably has more of a clue than Roger. Roger was another bully, always badgering Vicky and everyone in earlier episodes. That's true. Talk about lost potential equals Angelique. She could have been / done so much. Instead, she obsesses over Barnabas, who isn't all that. Get over it already. Oh, and Lisa. Victoria returning from 1795, talking about the hanging, and finally quips, I'll never wear a turtleneck again, Snicker. Then there is talk of needing a doctor. Julia, I'm a doctor, Roger replies. Well, wonders never cease, laugh out loud. I especially enjoyed when Wadsworth was carrying Julia out of the joint. I liked the snarky conversation that she and Barnabas were having in the library after the seance. Oh yeah, and I think I went over Tito's discussion already, but maybe not the end of it? The musical cue from The Time Machine was cool in that it was prominent, yet kind of comes and goes, fleeting and barely permitting recognition, but giving you enough to hook on to. That was a movie I used to keep an eye out for when I was a kid. It was in rotation on the local TV stations, and every so often I'd catch a chunk of it, or maybe the whole thing. I eventually read the book, but probably couldn't get past the vivid visual impression of the film. Yeah, me too. The chamber pot reference was pretty funny, with there already being a chamber pot strategically placed. The repeating motif of chamber pots and coffee cups have the raising suspicions of liquid beverages of any kind. Of course, this is my specialty, going for the gross out angle. I actually had some thoughts for Wadsworth's bubble sequence, but didn't get it out of the notepad. I'll deliver that with the other responses, for which I will probably need to give the track another listen. Good stuff, Daryl. I'll be in touch pretty soon here. Peace out. And then there's Blippiverts and somebody else. Oh, Tingler, this is good. And yeah, we already went through that slow, ever so slow show. Yes, coffee is supposed to relax and calm us, get us ready for bed. Drink more, relax yet? Haha. Let's all look at our magic mirror. Mirror, mirror, who's the evilest of them all? Now you have Wadsworth knowing so very much. Then we have the cane and some unsightly Willy on it. And a mention to the old days when servants could be beaten. A lot here, one must slip under it to see it all. Yes, Carolyn being controlled as it started on the show. Then, as if on cue, poof, she was free of the control. Of his control, yeah, because Wadsworth was saying, you might want to take that hypnotizing spell off of your cousin Carolyn, sir. And then, as she's going to go bother Dr. Hoffman, it just sort of fades. It's really nice. The jokes were great, and info better, but just one question. Why, if she was just given back her own will, does she defend and keep safe his true condition? Also, the stories, they noticed, are slightly different. Yeah, well, I think with Carolyn, it's like, it's just, she kind of knows that Dr. Hoffman knows, so she's not really announcing anything or keeping anything away. You know, it's just sort of there. Well, you're going to make me think, aren't you? Let me see. Yep, a sun comes up from the west and sets in the east. Then you put in a bay. Thank you. I got the lesson. Plus, you started your foreshadowing with Maggie. Oh, and cream and sugar. What are not civilized? We have crumpets with our tea. Thank you very much. This was a very inclusive episode. Lots going on and very well traversed. So, till next time, we entwine our ears, be safe, and stay away from evil coffee. Drink Postum. Oh, Warren. Yeah, now I think I've read this one before. I was talking about, like, they should go to Darrow Ward for a sequel to the movie. It's like, well, I kind of thought of that one. But I haven't really been having much success with my sequel lately to the film. And Helena? I don't know if I read this earlier. These things that definitely had me. One, Vicky will definitely need a turtleneck to cover that rope burn around her neck. And two, Wadsworth is the voice of reason to our handsome vampire guy, Barnabas. And three, the mummy reference actually brought me back to the mummified bodies of James Forsythe and Amanda Collins from the 1841 parallel Wuthering Heights storyline. That was also my first realization that Jonathan Frid could be passionate beyond the kisses when he played Bramwell Collins, especially when it was implied that he and Catherine got it on when he kidnapped her to keep her from marrying Morgan Collins. This was a great rewrite. Carry on. And then, oh, there's O'Sheen. From 2014, because she's getting into it, and I kind of remember some of this. So, my goodness gracious, someone else who listens to Annette Hanshaw. Do you have the Jasmine Records Annette Hanshaw The 20 Sweetheart CD? I certainly did not expect to see that reference there. And speaking of references, I do enjoy the references to bumping into the microphone. Ah, the dreaded boom shadow. The Wizard of Oz comparison has occurred to me too, particularly with the rather silly number of people in 1795 who just happened to look exactly like people in 1967. I'm having a bit of trouble having Bill react to that in ways that don't get too completely humorous for the tone I'm trying to set in my tale, since it does really get a little over the top by the time Countess Dupre, Andre, Josette, Millicent, etc. turn up. I'm figuring Bill will have some sort of Wizard of Oz thought or comment somewhere. Just haven't figured out where yet. So, wow. Like, she was, like, in the midst of working on Standfast and Damn the Devil and looking at the pit. It's like she's having the same, like, yeah, this is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking about Wizard of Oz stuff, too, because, like, all these people replace other people. And yeah. So that's really good. And she carried up into, I think, even the last episode. I'm not sure if she did something official for episode 23, but there was definitely help, and she had reactions to demos and stuff, so there was that. So she's, like, a little more interactive as far as helping me with the building and that kind of thing, and has been over time. And that looks like about it, I do believe. Okay, so I think that wraps up the comments and discussion for episode 2, Chamber Pots and Coffee Cups in the Pit of Ultimate Dark Shadows. Put
it in. Hopefully you will get in touch. Hopefully this won't be too long. I've got to edit it. So if you want to talk about the episode original or the retrospective, my email address is xoiscythe@hotmail.com. Again, xoiscythe@hotmail.com. And I hope you're doing good, and I hope to hear from you sooner than later. There are other ways of getting in touch. There is DWAR at YouTube. There's DWAR through Google Chats or Google, once upon a time called Google Hangouts. And there is, where is the Dreamwit stuff? Daryl-war.dreamwith, dream isn't sleeping, with isn't wide, one word,
dreamwidth.org, and that's who I'm at Dreamwidth. Or you could just log into Dreamwidth and look for Interest Dark Shadows. I'm often there at the top, just because I do kind of update this and weblog pretty regularly. Or you could just talk to me on WordPress if however you talk allows it. There are a lot of problems with WordPress where even if you have an account, sometimes it just doesn't go through and you have to keep on pestering it and pestering it and pestering it. And once upon a time when Lord Grow was in touch with me more often, he was saying, I'm going to get in touch with WordPress because it doesn't make any sense that I can't put comments on, you know, your weblog. And I agree. Doesn't make any sense. And I don't know what is the problem. Maybe he found out some weird, wicked secret that I don't know about. There are a lot of weird, wicked secrets that I don't know about, especially the gossip about me. I just imagine stuff. I don't really know. But I have lived through this garbage from my formative years in public grade school and beyond that. So yeah, I've got a lot of ideas of what is going on. But I don't want to voice them because I don't want you assuming that what I say is gospel. Just because I assume, hey, maybe this is what the gossip's about, I don't know, so I'm not going to say it.
Whatever the gossip is about me, it's obvious that it's there. When I say I don't really know what it is, I don't go looking for hashtags about me to go find out what it is and what all the people are gossiping about or the trash talk for approval. I just know that it's there because I've been there before, and over time, when I casually mention my project or my podcast, people I know start behaving very strangely and begin garbling things. It's not quite under his or her breath, but it's under the breath. It's this weird non-worded like noise that people make. It's very clear to me that there is gossip and trash talk going on, because to talk about it to my face is not a good thing. And every once in a while, a person that I've known for years understands that and recognizes, well, if I start trash talking her to her face, and I've gotten that too, weirdly enough, as if the person starts trash talking me in a way where he doesn't seem to recognize that I'm right in front of him, just start to repeat the trash talk. So I know what some of it is. It's pretty stupid what I've heard of it. Because for the main thing, most of what you know is what I have told you. And it's just ridiculous. You know, I could have been making up stuff about having drinking problems. I could have been making that crap up just to get attention. But boy, you all bought it. You know, hook, line, and sinker. Didn't even matter. But yeah, some of this gossip, what I hear is just garbled non-words. And I recognize that there is a problem right there, and also just the odd way when people encounter me and they know about the podcast and what I do, they behave almost exactly like somebody who is slowly getting indoctrinated at my grade school starts to recognize, oh, this is the cootie girl and I need to stop talking to her because the rest of the group, we don't treat her like a human being, we treat her like a freak. So, yeah, I'm going to notice these things that I've already experienced. So, yeah, I'm going to be very aware that there is hate speak for rewards and trash talk for the groupthink going on. That, like I said, in the retrospective for episode 1, I was talking about that, where 10 years later, people don't know what to say. And as adults, they especially don't know what to say because they're suddenly in that classroom again. And they're stuck because they don't seem to recognize the manipulation going on with the big tech and the surveillance manipulation, is what I'm calling it, that's been going on. To make money, to make a profit, to sell advertising. Worse than getting your attention with a stupid soap opera, you know, have you on the edge of your seat piece of fiction to get you sitting on the edge of your couch going, oh my gosh, what's going to happen next? Here's an ad for toothpaste. You better go and buy this toothpaste or whatever it is. I gotta say, within the last year, detergent, as silly as those commercials are, detergent is an amazing product. I have got to just express that right now, especially since I'm doing a show kind of about a soap opera anyway. That soap is something else. Soap is an amazing thing. So, there you go. But the behavior, the human behavior towards me is very pathetic, and I would like that to change. And I have been recognizing, I even was telling a longtime listener today
that she crossed two major barriers. The first one in getting in touch with me was psychological. The one-to-one, oh, she's a performer, and she's got... And you just start feeling weird, and yeah, if you get in touch with any performer, you're going to feel weird. I just about fainted one time when I got a very, very short email from Kathleen Scott once upon a time, because I was asking a question, and she said she hadn't gotten the message, could I please resend it? And I just about fainted. But I never heard back from her when I responded to that. I just knew that I was going to lose it. So, you know, so yeah, I understand. It's a little scary to, I mean, even college DJs. I was nervous talking to them, but I knew I had to do it just to break through and have communication with people I admired, you know, as a teenager. I just had to go that route and just speak to people. And I know it's weird, too, when you talk to somebody and you realize, I can't go back and replay the tape. Because if you're, like, taping the radio or whatever and you're enjoying what somebody's saying on the radio, you can't replay it when they're talking to you in person. But it really feels like you're listening to the radio because you know their voice from the radio. It's really weird, though I totally understand that. But I told her she broke an even thicker barrier, which was the sociological problem. Whereas loads of people that she's likely talked to and dealt with or seen, you know, threads online of gossip about me. So she had to break a bigger barrier, and it's not a psychological, it's less a psychological one, it's more of a sociological one, where you're going against the groupthink mentality. And I just wanted to applaud her and say, let her know that was harder. And I really applaud you for being able to do that. And she was happy to hear it. She was pleased that I was noticing those things. But yeah, that's what needs to be done. I mean, you just sort of grapple your interest. I am interested. I've been listening to your podcast for X amount of years, and this is my name, and this is my interest. Or I ran home from school or whatever, or I got interested because of a relative. That's usually how people get interested in Dark Shadows, I've noticed. There's some relation that gets the person interested, or an aunt, uncle, parent, grandparent, step-grandparent, or step-parent, you know, that kind of thing. And there's some elder of like, oh, you might like this, and that kind of thing. Well, I remember Jonah talking about seeing the Addams Family as a kid for the first time, and when the voiceover talked about how they were going to come on, like, as the next program, his parents were like, oh, you're going to like this, and he's all, what is it, what is it, you know, as a little kid. That was, you know, like, the first time he was watching the Addams Family, like, his parents knew that he was going to dig it. So yeah, you start with that, you know, you write to the email and you just try to write it like a letter. Dear Daryl, I've been interested in your show, or I've been listening to your show for X amount of time, and I've either been enjoying it or suffering listening, and, you know, suffering with your pain for however long, and just that kind of thing. Just like a letter. Just tell me about yourself, because that's the main thing that I was sharing for, is to have people get in touch and let me know your memories and your nostalgia and what you like and however you want to get started. And I have been concerned, and like I said, there's no way that I can erase the past. And there's no way you can erase the past, but you can start over. You can re-get in touch with me. You know, there are people that I used to talk to on Skype. Does anybody remember Skype? Now it's all about Zoom. But yeah, once upon a time, we had Skype before that. So yeah, I don't know. I probably have it somewhere. I can't remember. I'm sure people still use the darn thing. Do I even have it? Oh, I've got... There's a little icon somewhere with that S with the cloud. I just hit it. I don't know if it's going to do anything. Signing into Skype. Please wait. Oh, looks like it's part of the big bad Microsoft. Okay. Well, I'm going to close that tab because I don't want to deal with that now. Just wanted to see if it worked. Oh, so hopefully this isn't going to be too long and I can splice it together and all that. And you've enjoyed the retrospective to episode 2, Chamber Pots and Coffee Cups for
January 2024.
I hopefully can get this out there. So those are the ways to get in touch with me. xoiseythe@hotmail.com. That's the email address. Or daryl-war.dreamwith.org. There is also that website. I'm trying to figure out Google Chat. It's mail.google.com.chat. And I am d.war over there, or @dwar over there. And there's also pitofultimatedarkshadows.wordpress.com. That's something I've had for many, many years before I made the narrative site one. But anyway, so there you go. Hopefully I will figure out how to edit all this and make it make sense. I hope you get in touch, and for my humble and loving audience, take care.